Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello, welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I'm Mary.
And we are talking Baldur's Gate in celebration of the well-beloved hit video game Baldur's Gate 3. That's crazy. I mean,
it is
D&D movie didn't do the numbers that we were hoping, but it was good.
It was good.
By the most important metric, in my opinion, please just make a good D&D movie where I can be like, or people will be like, hey, aren't you that weird D&D thing? I'm like, yeah, you should watch the movie. It's really good. And I'm not a liar for it.
Right. It's not that whole fandom bias thing that some people get where it's like, oh, no, it's our fandom, so it's the best thing.
Right.
It's actually good.
It's good. It's good. Like, that's without bias, just in my objective opinion, it's good. Mm-hmm. So it's weird that we had a good D&D movie and then that's even better in terms of how it's been received and how well it's doing financially. Video game all in 1 year is wild to me.
I feel like it's on track to be game of the year. I'm just saying.
I mean, it does have
it's a contender.
Some stiff competition.
Solid. It does, but it's a solid contender. Ooh,
it's just wild that these RPG games are the games that are getting everyone in a tizzy. I love it.
I'm here for it. Speaking of putting people in a tizzy,
let's hear it.
An announcement, I guess, at the out the gate, as it were. Out of the Baldur's Gate. There's been recent adjustments that I've had to make in real life that have kind of put Sergio and I, us here, in a bit of a bind. Fairly substantial one at the moment. So it's going to lead to upcoming changes. I am going to step down from my position here on the show proper as a co-host.
What?
Yes, you're shocked and appalled.
This is the first I'm hearing about this.
He's a liar and a fraud.
I'm both those things.
You are so many things. It's not an easy choice by any means, but I kind of gotta. So I can't give you guys the quantity and quality of content that you should be getting from us and that is absolutely standard and expected here in the time frame that we have available at the moment. And I'm not okay with half-assing anything. I don't
You
want to
use your whole ass.
Right. And it's, yeah. Yeah, if I'm committing, it's whole ass. All ass or none.
100% posterior.
100% posterior. But so basically I'm not going to be hosting weekly episodes anymore, but that doesn't mean I'm like going anywhere, not leaving the community. I'm not, you know, abandoning Dungeons and Dragons and all of this wonderful stuff that is amazing and that I love. And I'll try to jump in as often as I can here and there, try to, you know, come to round tables, and we're just going to kind of figure it out moving forward. But that's kind of where things are at the moment. And I guess that being said, then see you in Baldur's Gate.
This is not the most ideal of situations, unfortunately. No. You know, the door is very much still open for to rejoin the team in a more I guess official manner. Like she said, she, you know, still going to be on the Discord, still going to be just sneaking around all stealthy wealthy
as I can't make a commitment and say, oh yeah, I'll be able to do all of these things when I can't, because that's not how I roll.
And so, so like I said, the door is still definitely open should things in the future change. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you'll be seeing slight changes in the show, and it's how it's released and kind of what's going on. Since for the foreseeable future, it'll probably be a one character operation. But yeah, so that's the sad part of this episode. Now let's talk about the great part, which is the lore. The lore of Baldur's Gate.
Yay. There is some lore of Baldur's Gate. So it's also been known as Lochlea or the City of Blood.
Awesome.
Right? Straight off the jump. There we go.
I was like, have you ever been to Baldur's Gate? Oh, you mean the City of Blood? Jeez.
It's amazing, right? But if you've traveled in any sort of D&D circle anywhere at all, or past a comic book shop or TTRPG shop in your travels, you've heard of it. It's kind of a thing. And if you're only just arriving after the full release of a certain game that has a very similar name, that's totally cool too, and welcome. That's awesome. I hope that happens. I hope you get a massive influx from it.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, you know, gatekeeping. I will gatekeep gatekeepers. That is where I stand.
The only thing. Mm-hmm. We gatekeep bigotry and gatekeeping. So Baldur's Gate is the largest city-state in the Western Heartlands of Faerun. It is a city that is, you know, just ripe with opportunity and commerce. This is where you go if you're trying to, you know, go make it out there.
Make it big.
You're going to go make it big. I'm heading out to Baldur's Gate.
I'm going to make it big in the City of Blood.
In the City of Blood.
Find my fortune.
You might could.
I mean, there are some pretty shady parts of the city that I'm sure we will get to.
There's shady parts of everything. Come on now. So the coat of arms that you may, you know, recognize, or your players may recognize, is a ship with its sails raised and it's sitting on still waters with a big blue sky behind it. It's a symbol of its founder, and also a symbol of the, you know, of now, of it being the bustling trading hub that it is. The city is divided into four sections: the upper city, the lower city, and the outer city. And then there is also the underground, or the undercellar. So the upper city, some of this stuff may sound familiar because it's been touched on in various other episodes. So I tried not to dive too far into the stuff that we've already talked about or that you've already listened about, but there's going to be overlap.
Yeah, as you know, as important and epic as a city as Baldur's Gate is to Faerun, to the Forgotten Realms, mm-hmm. we for sure have mentioned it countless times in various episodes.
It comes up here and there.
It's kind of important.
It's a big deal. So there is the upper city. This is where like the wealthier folks are, the elite. It's well lit, clean streets, nice buildings, you know, marked by, you know, the some notable things here are the Watch Citadel, which is where the city's protectors' barracks are, and also their training facility for that region. And the High Hall, which is the palace of the Grand Dukes. This is also where you're going to find the Black Dragon Gate. The lower city is made of tightly packed streets with like tall, slender buildings. It's a sprawling place of, you know, work and trade, and it's where all the, you know, merchants and folks are. Has six smaller districts within it. Some landmarks include the Grey Harbor itself, and Baldur's Mouth, which is a place where official business is conducted, like daily news distributed by like town criers and stuff like that, kind of a town square, essentially. The outer city is a shanty town that grew outside of the walls. It's a rather unregulated area of the city, and it is broken down further into nine smaller districts.
Unregulated area is a very political way to put that.
It's trying to be politically correct. It's also a very apt description.
It's like, oh, you headed to the outer city? That's a pretty unregulated area there.
I hear it's unregulated out there. It's unregulated as heck. Oh, beneath the city streets is a twisted series of cramped tunnels that are known as the Undercellar. So these corridors reach to nearly every corner of the great city, with several entrances, which are usually well guarded by various enterprises throughout the city, seedy and otherwise. Beyond,
right. there are some, you know, reputable businesses and merchants there for sure.
Oh yeah. Some of them a little bit seedy. Beyond the Undercellar, the tunnels there, they wind down, eventually leading into the Underdark, of course. So the city herself, she's a crescent moon-shaped city that wraps around the Grey Harbor, and it's all along the cliffs of that Grey Harbor is actually where you're going to find the lower city. That part just blows my mind to me, and I guess it's just one of my weird hang-ups, because I'm not cool with being real high up in the air or near the edge of things. I don't care for it.
Well, you better make that money then, so you can live in the upper city.
This whole city. Well, I do have a solid chance at it, because the majority of the population there is human.
There you go.
In the upper city. It's very, you can't buy your way into their elite, though. You got to kind of be born into it.
Okay.
You got to be born into it. You will find Baldur's Gate located south of Waterdeep and north of Om. Kind of know where it is and what to expect there. We'll talk a little bit about life in Baldur's Gate.
Life in the big city.
Life in the big city. So Baldur's Gate is a member of members of the Lord's Alliance, despite the long-standing neutrality of the city, which is actually what made the gate into the city that it is. The tolerant, welcoming attitude towards, you know, folks of all walks of life has helped it become what it is. Baldur's Gate historically has had little interest in like foreign affairs and stuff like that, remaining a respected neutral power, not getting involved in anybody else's political BS, essentially. It maintains this neutrality and peace through a peacekeeping force called the Watch, along with the Flaming Fists. So that, it is.
I was going to say, like, when the Watch isn't enough, you got to call in the Flaming Fists. And that one, like, you know exactly what you're in for. Like, the Watch, like, okay, well, maybe they're just, I mean, they just watch.
It's
maybe
a city
like,
watch. It sounds they're lovely. Like, they're keeping
hey,
an eye
that.
Out.
Like, stop that. Crime. Criminal. Stop that right now. The Flaming Fists, though, like, oh, yeah, you done goofed.
This is, yeah. So there's, you don't want to mess around too much. You don't want to faff about too much in Baldur's Gate. It's a very, very well defended city that very few would even consider attempting an invasion on. Natural inlet that it's built on kind of provides one form of defense in and of itself. While the Great Wall that is surrounding it provides additional defenses. Aside from that, you know, there's, you know, the Flaming Fist, the Watch, and the Grand Dukes themselves also command a navy with half a dozen ships, with crews of about 40-ish guys on each.
Okay, okay. It's a lot of guys.
It is. It
trying
is.
To do the quick math. That's about like 240 guys.
You're right. You're right. That's a lot of guys. It's a big city, though. You've got to. They do actually also have a long-standing enmity. Speaking of, you know, folks that would be attackers. The one that comes to mind is their long-standing enmity with that almost ended in war at one point during the Iron Crisis, which was like the 1360s DR-ish. Aside from that, you know, long-standing issues they're having with the only major threats that the city faced were the pirates that were at the ruins of Luskan and the merchants of Waterdeep, who were quite jealous and bitter about the continuing growth of, you know, wealth and power to be found in Baldur's Gate.
I love how these like cities be beefing with each other. Love that.
They do. They, you know, they're gonna be beefing. It is ruled by four Grand Dukes, also known as the Council of Four, that are elected by citizens, and they either rule until they no longer want to and retire, or until they die. There are several roles within the city. Each member of the Council of Four has five deputies below them that they are served by, and those guys have guys below them. So those five would be the Harbor Master, the Constable and Master of Walls, the Master of Drains and Underways, the Master of Cobbles, and the Purse Master, whose job descriptions I didn't feel necessary because self-explanatory.
Right, right.
As far as laws go, and, you know, following the law in Baldur's Gate, it gets a little bit complicated. There is a somewhat complex legal code that is kind of twisty and turny and has a bunch of decrees and legislations that make it very hard to make sense of for pretty much anyone except, like, you know, city barristers and a few of the higher class folks. Oddly enough, those are all the exact people that are going to benefit from the laws they have in place. Isn't that crazy?
What a coinkadink.
What? So, you know, along with, you know, these higher up, the higher echelon folks, Flaming Fists, the members of the Watch, as well as like foreign diplomats and such. Regular citizens are not afforded as much leniency to those above them either, which again comes as no surprise. This all sounds very familiar to me. A little strange law tidbit, by the way. Random strange law. Livestock of any kind is prohibited from being within the city proper. Anything larger than a peacock is relegated to the outer city, and the only animals that you're going to see fairly commonly is cats. And that's solely for like the purposes of like vermin hunting and thing, because, you know, there's ships and all that stuff coming in from other places.
No livestock.
No livestock.
No cows. No cows. You said larger than a peacock?
Anything larger than a peacock.
That's gonna be how I start like gauging the size of things.
You'll use anything. Is it larger or smaller than a peacock?
So like it's about the size of three peacocks.
You can't bring that in here. I'm sorry. You cannot bring it in. I don't care if it's three separate animals, it is still collectively larger than one peacock. I don't care how many kobolds are in that trench coat. They're not coming in here. However, as long as you like, if you obey the laws there, though, like just follow the rules, you're welcome there. If you break any of those aforementioned laws, you're going to be immediately apprehended and punished, either by the Watch or the Flaming Fists. Most of the time, however, the crime and punishment are actually equally matched. So for, you know, lesser crimes, you would lose the finger or get a public whipping, you know, things like pickpocketing or swiping stuff, little steely things. If you break a contract with someone, you might
Hold on. Hmm? So if you...
I like how long it took you to buffer.
If you steal like a candy bar, you could suffer a public whipping. That's the...
Yeah.
That's the, you know, core... That's a correlation.
You shouldn't be stealing shit.
Yeah, apparently not in Baldur's Gate.
Don't be stealing in Baldur's Gate. You might lose a finger or get whipped publicly. And if you happen to be in a contract and you just decide you're done with it, you know, and just bail on it, breaking the contract, you're likely to get sentenced to being, you know, doing forced labor, disturbing the peace, things like that will get you locked up in the stocks overnight for, again, public shaming.
I'm oddly okay with that one.
I feel like it's all right. I'm okay with this. Oh, you're going to be loud and rowdy all night in the middle of the street? Okay.
Right. We're going to lock you up and
you can stay there.
So people can throw, I'm assuming, like tomatoes.
You got to throw tomatoes and cabbages. You have to.
Here's the thing is cabbages the whole throwing, hurt. To digress just a bit, throwing tomatoes, that whole bit, tomatoes are pretty hard and firm. They don't just like explode.
Uh huh.
I mean, getting hit with a tomato.
I don't think it was the intention was to be nice, honey. I'm sorry to break this to you, but
I mean, I feel like the intention is to for the impact for sure, but then also for it to, you know, to be messy and explode all over you. And now I got tomatoes all over me. But I think they're just like they'll just like bounce off of you, and you're just left with bruises. You're clean.
Unless you throw them. It's true. Unless you throw them hard enough, or if they're sliced tomatoes. Sliced tomatoes. Hurt.
Ah, you're talking about pre-rigged tomatoes, the way they will like kind of saw a table in half before a wrestling match, so that way it's guaranteed to break when they put someone through it. A little bit of inside baseball for you.
Sure. Yes, that's exactly. I was gonna absolutely make a wrestling.
But back to Baldur's Gate.
So aside from being, you know, tomatoed and whatnot. It's like, as far as laws go, even the businesses there have to have proper licensing to operate. Everything is on the up and up, except the things that are on the down low and shady, as it should be, I suppose.
Makes the world go round.
It is. The Grey Harbor is one of the biggest, most popular, and is one of the busiest ports along the western coast of Faerun, due to, again, that neutrality. Anybody is welcome to conduct their business here as long as they follow the laws. Like, just I don't care where you came from. Don't care how you got the stuff. Don't break any laws while you're here and you're good. So that is what's made it into the largest trading center along the entirety of the Sword Coast. It even rivals Waterdeep and Om. It went as far as to, they actually went as far as to mint their own silver trading bars for a bit, kind of their own in-town currency, which of course, you know, the city set the value of and regulated the use of.
Right.
The gate also sponsors about 90-ish professional guilds throughout, from upper city financiers to seafarers, brewmasters, metal workers, like all kinds of skilled tradesmen. Any of that that you need to look for, this is where you're going to go. There are also folks of all species here. You know, as adventures happened, you guys are going to pretty much anybody's going to be welcome in there. But it is and has been throughout history primarily dominated by humans, although there are some dwarves, some elves, and even a few drow that settled here. They weren't treated any differently, but it's primarily humans. None of the playable species that you're going to run into are going to be like outright banned, but some of the more monstrous humanoids are considered to be a more rare sight. You know, your orcs and ogres and trolls, etc., etc. So now that we've set that up, why don't we jump to the middle bit of the show where it gets middly and then come back? I'll give you the history of Baldur's Gate.
A Baldur's Gate history lesson.
Yes.
All Hello and welcome to the middle of the show. We do our housekeeping, we talk D&D news, and of course we get into homebrew shenanigans. First and foremost, let's thank the patrons of the show, those of you, those fair folk of the Patreon who have signed up on patreon.com/dndlorecast. Thank you so much to all of you for supporting the show in the way that you do. And an extra special shout out to Jedi Master Deadpool, the newest patron. I absolutely love the name. And the icon is the PFP is fantastic. It's Deadpool holding a lightsaber, which is, I didn't think I needed that in my life, but I did. And now that I have it, I feel a little bit more complete. But yeah, thank you so much for signing up on the Patreon. If you are interested in doing so as well, like I said, you can go to patreon.com/dndlorecast. We just posted last episode's The Planes of Conflict from Planescape. We just posted the Patreon Plus installment for that episode. We're a slightly bit late on August's bonus episode, but that will be posted here in the next few days as well. Yeah, you get Patreon Plus installments at least twice a month. You get a bonus episode every single month. And plus a lot of cool other content, as a bunch of other cool perks like free merchandise, t-shirts, coffee mugs, tote bags. You can get a game that is DM'd by myself. You can get a workshop to help you homebrew your own campaign setting, or teach people how to play D&D. Like, hey, I have friends that want to learn how to play, that would play with me, but they don't know how to play. Can you help me teach them? Absolutely, we can do that. Just check it out. Check it out if you want to, if you're interested in supporting the show in this way and also getting some cool bennies. If you want to support the show in other ways, of course, all the social medias, the X's, the whatever, the Twitters. I'm gonna always call it Twitter. Threads, Mastodon, Blue Sky. We have TikToks, Instagram. We have planted the D&D Lorecast stake in the ground pretty much in every social city, every digital city we could find. Because we don't know how it's going to shake out. We don't know. I mean, hey, no one thought MySpace would be gone as quickly as it was. Ultimate rips to Tom. So you can support that show, or you can support the show in that way. Also leaving 5-star reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And, just telling friends, telling anyone you think would appreciate the show, would like the show, would enjoy the show, would benefit from the show. Like I said, this is a complete labor of love. The funds from the Patreon go to pay artists to create even more content for the show. We would do this regardless. And so, we just want to spread the joy and love of D&D and tabletop role-playing games to as many people as possible. As far as D&D news goes, Vandelver coming out, and it's pretty cool. They've released one-sheet newspaper, the Vandelver Post, that you can use as a handout for your Vandelver game, for your Vandelver campaign. Print it out and maybe wrinkle it up a little bit, maybe make it look like a newspaper or something, and use it in your campaign. We'll link to that in the show notes. And of course, the new playtest just dropped. It's a chonker. They're getting chonkier as they go. So we'll link to that, obviously, so you can check that out, as well as to the hour and a half long video where it's discussed with Todd Kendrick interviewing Jeremy Crawford, discussing what's going on in the playtest. Links to both of those in the show notes as well. And lastly, in the news section, the Deck of Many Things, which includes the Book of Many Things, will be coming out here in a couple months. And it has been announced that that it's going to feature Dungeons & Dragons' first canonically autistic character. They go by the name Austeria. Asteria, not sure. Again, a lot of these names are made up. You kind of pronounce them how you want, except I've learned Dritz, when you pronounce it Drizzt, it makes them feel sad. And that goes back. We talked about it in the Dark Elf trilogy episode as to why it makes them feel sad. So that's probably the only one I would say, like, hey, don't pronounce it any way you want. But anyways, so Asteria is the creation of the designer Mackenzie D'Armas, who is an absolute delight. If you could check out any episode of Dragon Talk that she is on, always fun. Like you can tell, like, through her voice, you can tell how much she loves the game. But yeah, she put a bit of herself into the character, you know, because she is on the spectrum. She wanted to create a character that, you know, gets to express her love and other things beyond just like, hey, I'm autistic. And so, you know, it's a part of, you know, everything that she does. It doesn't define her. So it's really cool. You know, myself having a child that's on the spectrum, and me myself probably never being tested, but, you know, having, you know, my kid and seeing, like, you know, like how they interact with the world and how they behave, kind of like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I do. And that's kind of what I do too. And okay, things are making a lot more sense nowadays. Seeing stuff like that, you know, representation is utterly important, and good representation is even more important. So it's cool that, so knowing that it's someone, you know, who understands those experiences and is creating the character is just peachy keen. And now, as far as the homebrew corner, we've discussed this one before. It's I can find the dang tab. I got like a million tabs open right now. Heroes of Baldur's Gate. I'm relatively sure we've discussed this before, and I want to just give it a little. I mean, obviously the episode is about Baldur's Gate, and if you want even more BG in your life, this is what to do. But yeah, it's from the lead designer of the first two Baldur's Gates, but it is a full color 160 page adventure book. You've got a first to sixth level campaign that'll, you know, that centers around the city of Baldur's Gate. And I mean, it's as good as a third party, like unofficial, you know, content will get as far as the writing and the art goes. It's absolutely chef's kiss. But what I really want to talk about is the next item from the summer cohort from Bard House Media, from TTRPG University. So as I said last week, I took part in this writer's workshop in writing an adventure, and I'm absolutely like just flabbergasted at all the creativity that I was surrounded by. I definitely want to highlight some of the already published work that my cohorts have created. And this week, it's actually not D&D, it's actually Pathfinder 2nd Edition, which, again, no shade being thrown. You know, here at the D&D Lorecast, you know, we focus on the lore from Dungeons & Dragons, but we love TTRPGs across the board. But this is just another haunted house. This 2nd Edition Pathfinder adventure, sitting in the midst of a busy town, an abandoned home is purchased by a rich noble from a nearby city. But there's more going on here than meets the eye. Missing people, strange noises, unexplainable events. It's just another haunted house. Or is it? So this is an 18-page adventure. Maps that you can use on whatever virtual tabletop that you prefer. And you can find it on PathfinderInfinite.com. Of course, a link to the show in the show notes to it will be included. It's only $3. $3. Check it out. Buy it. Enjoy it. Maybe this is your first introduction to Pathfinder 2nd Edition. That would be dope. And you could you have me and this is from Stevie. I don't know that I ever met your name. Her name is Stevie. It's great. You should check it out for sure. That being said, let's jump back into the show. Welcome back. When we last left you, Mary promised us a history lesson, a Baldur's Gate history lesson. Now, is she going to make good on that promise, or is she going to leave it? Oh, okay.
I will. I'm not that kind of, I'm not going to just like fail leave mid-show. Us
high
Sorry.
And dry.
I mean, it's never dry in Baldur's Gate.
leave it at that.
Always at least kind of rainy. One of the things I had read was discussing the weather in the area is kind of just always kind of misty and damp and just consistently soggy, I guess, like to the point where they have to actually throw straw into the streets sometimes to prevent the cobblestones from being too slippery.
Oh, I mean, I guess I was going to say, like, it's very quaint, it's like very twee in that sense.
It is.
But Also,
but for
like
such a massive city.
Yeah, you don't want people like slipping and breaking, cracking their dome.
They'll start blaming the city, and then that's a whole thing of problems. Like, that's a whole can of worms you don't want. So, long before Baldur's Gate was even a budding settlement, the land it sits upon belonged to a hill giant named Locke. It was known first as Locke's Fist. After his death sometime prior to zero DR, the first settlement sprung up here. A small fishing village called Locke Lee. In time, this became known as the place to meet up for ne'er-do-wells, pirates, ghost lighters, and scavengers. Ghost lighters used lights to trick ships into coming in, like thinking they would be able to come in safely to dock. But they did not.
Suckers, gotcha.
You run aground in the fog.
You stupid idiots.
You idiot. So then after these ships run aground, they would, you know, loot them and then sail up the river Xianthar to the safe haven of Grey Harbor. So by the year of Avarice in 204 DR, Locke Lee and Grey Harbor were already becoming well known, like are already well known ports of call on the Sword Coast. In days long since past, a seafaring hero by the name of Baldurin returned home to Grey Harbor from beyond the Isle of Evermeet. The return.
I'm sorry. As soon as you said Baldurin, I start in my head the Beach Boy song, Barbara. Paul Baldurin. Okay. I'm a silly boy. Do proceed, please.
He came back from a continent by the name of Ankorom, and with him he brought great wealth. So he dragoned away his riches. I would say squirreled, but I feel like this is more dragoning than squirreling.
For sure.
Especially with the quantity therein. He kind of hid it away in hidden caches and ordered a granite wall to be built around for the protection of his home. And then he soon set out on a second voyage to the continent, but vanished, never to be seen again.
Bum, bum, bum.
After his disappearance, sometime in the mid-1000s-ish DR, local farmers took control of the wall's construction and decided to use it for protection of their homesteads and holds instead of the, you know, home of a guy that disappeared and hadn't come back.
The dude that wasn't around anymore, yeah.
Yeah, he just came in and started a wall and left. Seeing this, you know, seeing this as an opportunity for protection, folks began to flock within the town, like into the town walls, and it began to flourish. The old walled-in part of Grey Harbor became known as Old Town, while the area getting new construction between the southern wall and the harbor became known as Heapside. By the year of the Unblinking Eye, which is like 446 DR, the city is widely known as Baldur's Gate. There are some that say that the name existed before 300 DR, the year of the late sun. But, you know, everybody's got a story about it. So the division caused by the town's wall created some strife within the landowners of the old town and of Baldur's former associates. The division caused by the town's wall created some strife between landowners of Old Town and Baldurin's former associates, like the seafaring folk of Grey Harbor. Now, the Old Towners were taxing carts that were coming in, like coming north into town from the harbor, taxing them on their way in through, which pissed off the sea folk, who eventually said, "No, I'm not paying your taxes anymore."
Understandable.
Right. This anger then turned into action. So merchants and traveling folk from the Heapside stormed Old Town. And just before they laid siege to the keep known as High Hall, the foremost senior captains among them pushed the farmer lords to surrender. After a vote, they came to a truce and the retired sea captains became jokingly known as the Dukes of this rapidly expanding city, officially known as Baldur's Gate.
Kick-ass Dukes. Yeah, I can understand how, like, nickname being Baldur.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand how his old buddies were like, hey, and we kind of run this town. And everyone was like, nah, like, you used to.
You did.
With your buddy, but he's gone. So we're going to take over now.
And the nation of Om was settled. Trade in the gate, that's when trade exploded. Like, it just took off. This secured the connection between Old Town and Heapside, which became known as Upper City and Lower City, respectively. So this new town comes on, you know, its new settlements popping up, comes on the scene. They decide to kind of band together instead. This is what sealed the fate of the Baldurians, and the wall was then extended. It went on to become, this goes on to become the most powerful city in the Western Heartlands, and though it's neutral, they joined the Lord's Alliance. During the early 14th century, the Flaming Fist began operating in Baldur's Gate. 1386 DR, Year of the Banner, Sarovec Anchev, the Ball Spawn, attempted to orchestrate a massive conspiracy that would send the city into a war with Om. So this plan did not work, failed spectacularly, and within 2 years, pretty much all of the Ball Spawn were dead due to Abdel Adrian, who is the future Grand Duke. Later, in 1386, the city is nearly overrun with refugees that are displaced by the Shining Lady and her crusade. The Flaming Fist joined nearby armies to, you know, band together, and they all meet this threat, like, head on. So now, this is where we start dipping into the games a bit.
The Vigi games.
The Vigi games, as they once were. I'm not doing it. Vigi games. So this is where Dark Alliance begins to come in. In early 1374 DR, the Year of Lightning Storms, a group of adventurers joined by the Harpers thwart the Xantam Guild's plans to only to find that they are a part of a larger plot. Like, it's more than just this one little group of guys, as it always is. It's a larger plot involving Eldrith the Betrayer and her Dark Alliance. Hence the name of the game.
That's how they got the name of the game.
My God, they said the thing. That's what it's called. In the years that follow, a vampire, Mordot Selanmer, seeks to destroy the city, only to be defeated in 1376 DR, which, by the way, is the Year of the Bent Blade. I love all the years. I just need a whole poster of them with all of them listed out. Because some of them are absurd.
Some of them are wild.
I love it. That's part of the appeal, is that it's absolutely absurd. So it's in the following decade that we see the spell plague happen. Baldur's Gate remains largely untouched and completely unharmed by the blue fire raining down, and becomes a refuge. It's like a safe haven for a lot of the refugees from around the Sea of Fallen Stars. Within a few years, the city had managed to triple its size. Amazingly capable of keeping up with its own growth, too, not getting too big for its britches too fast. Mid-15th century, which is like in the middle of the 1400s DR, Grand Duke Valarkin, General Ekal, and the Band of the Red Moon try to take control of the city. This failed attempt at a coup is led to government reform for the Baldurians. With a newly formed Parliament of Peers electing members of the Council of Four and also offering their assistance. So Abdel Adrian then replaces Valarkin as both the Grand Duke and the Marshal of the Flaming Fist. By 1479 DR, the year of the Ageless One, Baldur's Gate has become one of the greatest powers in Faerun and is once again stable. It is no longer being troubled by, you know, Om or Valarkin. While the expanding city held its own as it grew, it also nearly sent itself into a civil war during that. It did all right, but...
Yeah, you get too big too fast.
You do, and there's too many many fingers in the pie.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, too many fires in the iron here. Something's bound to happen. On returning day in the year of the Narthax murders, 1482 DR, Grand Duke Abdel Adrian was attacked by the only other remaining Baal spawn, a man called the Kang. It isn't known who came out the victor in this fight, though, because they both died. One of them fell to his mortal sibling, and the other one died after being transformed into an avatar of the dead god Baal. It was the avatar of the Slayer. So the Grand Duke's death is blamed on a group of death agents of the guild, and that's with a capital G, the most prevalent thieves group within the city. So a group of adventurers is then hired to investigate. Not long after that, the city experiences a spike in crime, ending with city officials passing laws where folks are being required to wear clothing that is fitting of their station and denotes their place within the hierarchy.
Oh man, I would hope to. I don't like to dress up. I like to be comfortable. And if I'm in this high station, I'm like, oh, you have to be all hoity-toity. I'd be like, man, I'll just go to the lower city. I'm fine. It's whatever.
I just take all my gold and retire to the lower city.
I'm gonna take all my gold and I'm gonna move.
Go dress like
to
a
Waterdeep.
Goblin.
And wear sweatpants all day.
Oh, Waterdeep sweatpants. I'd wear Waterdeep brand sweatpants. Like Waterdeep U. Little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Vandals also during this time beheaded 5 of the city's beloved statues as well. The adventurers, they tried. You know, them, the Fist, and the Watch, all of them tried. It just didn't cut it and couldn't get it back under control. So the city erupts into chaos. City workers go on strike. The upper city is locked down with mid-afternoon curfew. Lower city becomes unruly and incensed. Protests began in the outer city. And then things, you know, acts of petty vandalism eventually escalate into like arson and even kidnappings. The free press in the city is shut down as Baldur's Mouth is shut down. And a new leader of the Fist institutes a series of tribunals, which happen to be less than legal, trying to gain control of the city.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy that crime lord's gonna crime.
Exactly.
Riots erupt in the lower and the outer city areas after a group of outer city residents clashes with a group of the Flaming Fists. And after an explosion in Bloom Ridge, the city is placed under martial law. Everybody's grounded because nobody's behaving.
Right.
The adventurers are hired to figure out what exactly is happening here and end up uncovering a plot to destroy the corrupted Baldurian Parliament by Grand Duke Torlin Silvershield in a very, very, very dramatic fashion.
I wouldn't expect any less from the Grand Duke Torrin Silvershield.
Exactly. The intention to destroy the parliament was an immolation of a stockpiled smoke powder. He was trying to sever the hold that the guild has over the Baldurian officials. It didn't work. But before he was slain, he did reveal himself to be a chosen of Baal, the newly reascended god of murder.
Well, I mean, if anyone is going to try to
blow up a building full of,
it's either going to be someone wearing a Guy Fawkes mask or mm-hmm. a chosen of Baal, the newly reascended god of murder.
God of
those are the only two.
This is the only guys that are going to do this.
The only two I will accept. And of course, I mean, the story of Baldur's Gate continues on into Baldur's Gate 3, but we obviously want to avoid spoilers for those who have yet to play the game or are playing the game and haven't finished it. And so, like, yeah, the history is continuing as we speak.
You're literally making it.
You're making it. You're a part of history right now. If you are playing Baldur's Gate 3, you are writing Faerunian history.
Oh, I thought you meant writing like with an R. And I was like, I bet some of them are wronging Faerunian history too. Let's be honest here. I love you guys, but I have no misconceptions.
The player who killed every NPC and put all their bodies in one house. Oh my
gosh. Yeah.
Every day we get further and further away from Talos. Well, thank you so much for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. We'll be back next week with our first impressions of the full-length Phandelver adventure. We got early access because we can't help ourselves. And we've been reading it, digging into it. We're going to let you know what we think of it.
Excited. Finish reading it.
Just, you know, quick sneak preview. It's pretty awesome.
Hey, no spoilers, but it's pretty badass. Thanks.
And then, of course, we still have a couple of Planescape episodes before Planescape 5e comes out. So we're barreling towards that. But yeah, once again, thank you for listening. Mary mentioned at the top of the show, she will be taking a step back from hosting mm-hmm. duties. She still will be very much a part of the community.
Yep.
And the door is open to for any kind of return, whether it be as you know, as a co-host or as like a social media maven, something like, you know, this is something that we want the community to grow. Oh, yeah. We want to be able to incorporate as many people as possible.
We just kind of zigzag a little bit, and it'll be fine. It's fine.
It's just like in a D&D campaign when you kill an NPC you shouldn't have killed, and now the DM
the NPC and the DM has to rewrite everything.
And the DM has to be like, okay, like, how do I figure this out? This is the process of us figuring it out. Well, thank you again for listening. My name is Sergio.
And I'm Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
Listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.